legal show here on WWDB Talk 860. We're sponsored by Saw Offen Zervanos. We've got a fantastic broadcast. I'm your welcome, John Zervanos, into the program. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Joe. Thank you.
We're going to have an outstanding discussion. We couldn't be happier than to have our guest, Sean Dougherty, PA State Representative, serving the 172nd District, as our guest on the show. Sean, how are you, sir?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me, Joe and John. I really appreciate it.
It's definitely your pleasure. And we have a lot to talk about. And if you will, okay, and we're on WWDB Talk 860. Sean, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, your background, and your pathway to where you are today.
Absolutely. Well, first, again, Joe and John, I can't thank you enough for the opportunity to come on and to talk to you both, talk to your listeners. My name is Sean Dougherty. I represent the 172nd District in Northeast Philadelphia as a state representative. It's the honor and privilege of my life. It's a district, a neighborhood that I grew up in, that I live in. As I like to say, I'm a neighborhood guy, you know? So I went to St. Albert the Great grade school, went to LaSalle College High School, which is really where I found my love for public service in a sense, because they had a saying there, you enter to learn and you leave to serve.
Well, I could tell you that before you go any further, typically with all my friends from LaSalle High School and St. Joe's Prep, I always, because I'm a Roman guy typically, and I'm sorry to hear that. Well, I was just going to say, and I tell my friends from Penn Charter for where I went for a year, when you can't get into Roman, you typically go to Charter, Prep, or LaSalle, but we won't hold that against you, Sean.
Oh, listen, don't hold it against me. I mean,
you know. You know, it's great. I love the Catholic League traditions. We come from an era, and so I know your family also, you know, back in the old days when it was a Catholic South and Catholic North, the traditions were incredible. I'm sure you've heard stories about that, but we'll move on and just having a little fun.
So he was finishing with LaSalle High School, but then they could cut him off, so he's got to keep going.
No, he's going to keep going. Go ahead, Sean. I'm sorry.
No. Listen, my uncle went to the Prep.
Yep.
My dad went to the Prep for one day and then left and went to Newman.
Wow.
So
it's interesting.
I
went to Penn Charter for a year, and they politely asked me, you know, I wasn't, unless I was getting my butt kicked by one of the nuns or the priests, I wasn't happy. They treated me too good at Penn Charter. But, of course, I didn't know that about your dad, though. I didn't. What was the story about him walking in and walking out? I like him even more now than I did before we started this conversation.
Well, you'll have to ask him that. I can't answer that, but. My uncle was a Prep guy.
Yep.
My dad was a Newman guy, and I'm a LaSalle guy, and I'm proud to say that. But I went to LaSalle High School, then I went to Chestnut Hill College. I played at Chestnut Hill on the men's basketball team. 4 years. I was a bench player though, so don't check my stats.
Well, you became one of the captains, right?
I became a captain. Yeah.
Well, and I would expect nothing less from a Dougherty. So leadership runs in your blood.
You guys, every time we have these shows and you introduce, we have guests from Philly, and you guys go down memory lane.
That's right.
You make Philly sound like a small town.
Well, it kind of is when you talk about the Catholic League, and there's a lot of tradition. And by the way, I have great friends in Prep and all, but we just love having some fun. So, and then you went to Chestnut Hill, and then pick it up from there.
Yeah, so I went to Chestnut Hill. I always knew I wanted to be, I wanted to be an attorney. So I went to Temple Law School, graduated in 2019. I went to law school to be a prosecutor, actually, just like my dad was. But a certain district attorney didn't want to hire me. So I went and did different things. So I became a law clerk for the Superior Court of Pennsylvania, under Superior Court Judge Dan McCaffrey, who's now Supreme Court Justice.
Yep.
So I clerked for him for a year. But I always knew I wanted to be in a courtroom. Like I got tired of reading about what other lawyers were doing in a courtroom. So I went to work for the Defender Association of Philadelphia for 4 years, from 2020 to 2024. And I absolutely loved it. You know, it was just a great experience. And I was doing jury trials, and I got the jury itch. And I always thought I would just continue into, you know, the legal world in some sense. And opportunity comes knocking. So
when did you decide? I was going to say, public service. Tell us about that opportunity.
Well, I mean, I guess, Joe, to tell you, public service is, I would like to say, is in my blood.
It is in your blood.
And it's something that I love and cherish. And you know, I never thought I would be in the position I'm in now. But, you know, when my dad did public service, my uncle has done public service. When I went to law school and started practicing law, my dad would always mess around and say, you know, we're the public servants. Go out and make money.
Right.
But then an opportunity presented itself to help my neighborhood, help my neighbors. So I'll give you a quick story.
Sure.
So there was an incident with my predecessor. It was a mental health crisis. He's a great individual, great guy. But it went viral. That happened on a Thursday night.
Yep.
Friday morning, I'm in court at the CJC, the Criminal Justice Center in Philadelphia, telling judges, I'll be ready for trial with a motion, Your Honor, on Monday. Friday night, I get a phone call from ward leaders and elected officials saying, we want you to run for state representative. We need an answer right now, yes or no, because you have to be on the ballot by Tuesday. So I said, let's do it. And, you know, that weekend it was a full court, you know, press, and we got the signatures. And Monday morning I come back into court and I'm like, Your Honor, I need a continuance. He's like, why? But I got to quit my job today.
Incredible.
And left Philadelphia, drove up to Harrisburg, submitted my petitions, and it was off to the races.
Your head, Sean, your head must have been spinning.
Oh, it's been a whirlwind.
You mentioned that, you know, it's in your blood, public service. Of course, I know your family, and it's funny what your dad said, you know, about go make some money. But, you know, you certainly...
Some people may dispute that, by the way. Public service isn't a money-making opportunity.
let me say that because your family have served the public and lifelong Democrats and you know so many lives that have been impacted. Even though obviously you wanted to be an attorney, it was certainly one of the things I wanted to ask you was about your. When did you know you wanted to get into public service? I didn't realize it was going to be on a Friday and on a Tuesday you were going to be on the ballot. But it even though it was obviously a whirlwind, it had to feel somewhat natural once you came to grips with it.
Joe, I will tell you, and John, too, there's nothing better than having the opportunity to serve your neighbors. I'm honored and privileged to represent the 172nd district where I grew up, where I live. It's my neighbors. You know, there's no better feeling than helping your neighbors. That's the best part of my job. I love it.
Well, I can tell you that, and I do remember the incident with your predecessor. And yeah, I mean, what's interesting about that, typically, not only is it a whirlwind that, you know, when you got involved in the race, but you know you're going in and you have an impeccable background and education and more than qualified, but you're not as much going in with a lot of momentum. Like you had to hit the ground running. What was the campaign? What was that like for you? You know, because you're in court one day and the next week you're literally campaigning.
Well, Joe, like I say, an opportunity came knocking, and I went out knocking on doors asking for people to vote for me. But I'll tell you this. The one thing, and especially what I'm doing up here in Harrisburg as we're in session, is my mom always told me we have two ears and one mouth for a reason. Mm-hmm. To listen more, talk less. So I know I'm a freshman up here. I'm listening. I'm learning. Every day is a learning experience. So I just got to, you know, read the defense and find out how we can get what we need to get done for the neighborhood.
Well, it's fantastic. I'll tell you a funny story about my father when he became the business manager of the Ironworkers, and we never had a business manager. We always had a business agent, an assistant business agent. Once he became the business manager, it was decades ago, but he was up at his district council, and he put 12 resolutions in, right? He laughs about it, but he said he put a 13th one on, and he lost 20-0, right? And that's he said that was my learning curve right there. He had been obviously an official for 20 years, but it is a learning curve. What is your experience been? Talk about it, because you've been a state rep for about a year, a little over a year. Talk about your experience to date.
To be honest, Joe, 6 months. That's why I'm learning every day, you know. But I had great mentors up in Harrisburg and great mentors in Philadelphia, and especially, I love my family and everything they've done. It's a learning lesson every single day. But the one thing I will tell you is this: is it's all about the work you put in, and hard work beats talent when talent fails to work hard. And that's just what I'm up here doing. I'm just trying to work hard for my neighbors, for my community. You can't spell the word representative without the word present. And that's what I campaigned on and what I'm trying to do and am doing, not only in my neighborhood, in my district, but then also up here in Harrisburg.
John?
I'm curious. When you're a freshman, the colleagues that have more experience, are they receptive to your ideas or contributions to whatever is at hand at the time? Or do they kind of say, sit on the sidelines and listen, and we don't really want to hear from you? I'm just curious how that works.
That's a great question. It goes back and forth. In a sense of, I am a freshman, and no matter who the freshmen are and your older colleagues, but, I'm up here to make noise. I'm up here to help my neighborhood. So when I want to push something, I let them know. We're from Philadelphia. We let them know we're here.
And you just said we're from Philadelphia, and, I'm not out in the middle of the state or out so much outside of Philly as I used to be with my practice, but I remember being out there and being made to feel by the good folks in central Pennsylvania. That's generally when I felt like an outsider. You're from Philly. You're from Philly. And almost to the point where, even though Philly does a lot for the state, there's a resentment towards Philadelphia by the folks in the middle part of the state. I can't imagine what the
a state.
Yeah, I can't imagine what the folks in New York are thinking right now with the election of the mayor in New York.
Sure,
the folks in the middle part of New York, they call the red part of New York. They're probably thinking, what are those folks doing down there? And they're electing someone who's clearly to the left of the left. Our country and our state in particular, it's got a great divide politically. And do you find it challenging to kind of find common ground with a representative from, let's say, Williamsport, or the folks between Pittsburgh and Harrisburg? I'm just curious how that dynamic works.
it is a dynamic, but I'll tell you this. At the end of the day, no matter, and I would tell this when I was knocking doors, asking for people to vote for me. I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, Independent. If you're my neighbor, I want to help you. And regardless of what aisle we are on the House floor, everyone wants the same things.
When you say everybody wants the same thing, how do you find common ground though when you're representing a district in Philly that clearly has certain priorities that someone who lives in Altoona or Johnstown might not have? I'm just curious how you reconcile that.
So John, you reconcile it with like everyone wants to feel safe. So crime and public safety. You want good schools. You want fully funded schools, you know, and you want good, and there's no shame in my game, you want good union paying jobs.
Yep. Mm-hmm. What's interesting?
I mean, labor's in my blood. So, I mean, I get along with everybody. I'm a friendly person.
How are unions perceived, organized labor perceived by your colleagues who might not have a big union constituency,
or a real knowledge of what we're really about?
Yeah, how organized labor really works.
Well, I scream from the mountaintops, you know, that Pennsylvania, we need to make union is every, listen, build union by American.
Yeah, I can say this. I've had, you know, and I know Sean's background, and it kind of mirrors mine. And I had the pleasure of obviously knowing his uncle John, and I consider the greatest labor leader to ever live. Okay, and I've done radio with John. Yeah, he's the most influential human being I've ever met, and as talented as a human being could be. So when you talk, what is amazing though, Sean, is you know. You were an attorney, okay? You were in court one day. This is in your blood, okay? And it's interesting because I didn't know that in regards to, I mean, I knew you were an attorney, but I always assumed that was, you know, a stepping stone to get to get into public office because, you know, it's you know, union is in your blood, and politics is, you know, what's that saying, that, you know, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. So there's a parallel there. How is it, in a sense, and I understand John's point too, because a lot of times they look at us like we're Martians up in the counties, but how is it in a sense, being in the public eye now, okay? You know, I always say that I'll ask labor leaders, and John has done a lot of shows with our labor leaders, and you know, especially those in massive unions, you know, where everything they do is in the public eye. Now we're not all in that. When my dad was negotiating, we didn't have reporters at the door, right? But now that you are a public figure, okay. How is that change in dynamic in just your everyday life, even in a sense talking to people, because, you know, you're a public figure now.
To be honest, Joe, I'm just a neighborhood guy. It really hasn't changed. The conversations I have with individuals, that I have with my neighbors is the same ones that I was having when we're having a Miller Lite at a bar, or, you know, or having a hot dog at a baseball game, you know, when we're at Fox Chase Rec or whatever. So the only difference is now that I get the opportunity to actually do something. You know, they say, you know, talk is talk and you got to walk the walk. You know, I get to talk and now walk.
Yeah, I definitely see that. I wonder, in a sense, though, how your neighbors, like, now that you're a political figure and you can listen, you're impacting lives on a daily basis. You already were doing that, but now you're doing it in the public eye. How is that conversation from your neighbors to you now when you're talking about, you know, there should be a traffic light, or there should be some, you know, when they're talking to, are those conversations more, you know, oriented towards, you know, the issues in the neighborhood more so than just on a social basis?
Yes, in a sense. And I will, Governor Josh Shapiro, who is phenomenal, has saying, you know, GSD, get stuff done. I'm going to keep it PG, but get stuff done. The best part about my job is when people come to me for about an issue, and then I make phone calls and we try to get it done.
Absolutely.
The governor made the cover of Philly.
So it's different. So yeah. Well, Joe, it's different than, you know, when you're sitting at the rec, or, you know, shooting free throws, or even at a bar, or at a restaurant having wings or whatever. And people are talking about, well, this road isn't paved. This flag is falling down at this property. The best part about my job is I get to make a phone call and try to help them.
Right. It's funny because now when you hear statements like that, it could be a hint, you know, instead of a conversation.
You get calls from constituents and say, like, some of the pettiest things, and say, can you fix this?
He doesn't mean fix it like fix a ticket.
No. Sean. Fix it like trees.
Listen, I
trees,
see the fifth on that, you know.
No, I'm talking about fix this. Pardon, poor use of words. You had a call from a constituent saying, I'll use something petty, like a neighborhood dispute. Do you actually, and I'm curious, because I have people call me, and they'll say to me, what can I do? I say, well, a lawyer can't help you with this problem. I'll sometimes say, well, why don't you call your state representative? And then I think to myself, oh, geez, I just set that you know, guy or girl or woman up with a call. And I'm just curious, what task is too small or too large? I mean, what kind of things you get involved in with constituents call you? Like you said, I'll polls down. I get a call. I can make a phone call. I'm just curious.
So, John, it's one of the best parts about my job is networking, and you know, I'm on the state level, so I have limited options of what I can do. But specifically in the city and county of Philadelphia, you know, we have our city council, we have our mayor, great mayor Terrell Parker, who I love dearly. But the way you get things done is connecting people with the right options. A lot of times people don't know the routes to go.
Well,
we help direct them.
I got a question. I'll tell you where I'm leading to. You get calls, or you see it on the news, there's these dangerous intersections or a dangerous road, or I've been complaining about we need a sign here or whatever.
Drive on Roosevelt Boulevard.
Well,
and
sure.
Try to make
well,
left-hand
yeah,
turn.
And I had a horrible case involving horrible injuries 20 years ago involving a situation on the boulevard. You know, it's really like bumper cars sometimes. But the question I have for you is, let's say, you know, you're in the Northeast and there's a quote-unquote dangerous intersection or a road. And do you get calls from constituents? And if that happens, can you make something happen? Can a state rep make something happen in terms of fixing a dangerous road? Not you specifically, but can you get the ball rolling, so to speak?
To be honest, again, I'm 6 months in, so I'm learning every day.
Yeah.
But I think it starts there where you have to get the ball rolling.
I guess
where do you reach out to?
The boulevard's been dangerous for since,
I'll tell you what,
since it was built.
You're right about that, but I will say one thing about the boulevard. I think, Sean, you've seen this many times. And by the way, this is now that they have the cameras there,
yeah,
and now that they have the speed limits – As much as it annoyed the hell out of me, because I got two tickets in the same month and I didn't know I got the first one until I got the second one, I can tell you this: it is a much safer place than it used to be. Those things work.
Well, 100%. The fatalities and accidents are down on the boulevard since the implementation of the speed cameras and the red light cameras.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I listen, when it first came in, I was, of course, I mean, who wouldn't be? But the fact of the matter is even driving up the, because I go out, you know, we got the Union Hall still up there, but, you know, and family, and for whatever reason, now you're driving 45 miles an hour, 50 miles going up an hour going up there, and the people are behind you. Like, in other words, they're everybody knows what's going on. No one wants to get hit with those tickets, and it's a major deterrent. And I lived in the Northeast in Mayfair.
Well, it's a state highway, so it's dealt with. The state deals with it.
Well, I lived in the Northeast for a long time, and I can tell you, man, it was as you were. I don't have to tell you that the Roosevelt Boulevard. It was one treacherous area. It's still dangerous because you still have idiots that are going 90.
Well, there's a lot of things on that road, including, you know, pole placements and light standards that.
Oh, absolutely.
Are not according to PennDOT codes, but they've been existing in that condition for years and years and years.
And that's things that we need to work on, and that I plan to work on in the state house to try to help that. I mean, for instance, if you look at the five intersections that are most impacted with traffic incidents, I mean, I go right off Reedy and Nalberger.
Right.
I live in Foxy. Grant and the Boulevard, and then Red Line and the Boulevard. They have some of the most impactful accidents throughout the Commonwealth.
Absolutely. My father lived, so he, when he moved from East Falls, where I live now, I actually moved from Mayfair back to East Falls. He moved from East Falls when we moved the Union Hall up there. He lived at Grant and the Boulevard, right around the corner on Murray Street. And yeah, no question. You're talking about, you know, Grant and the Boulevard and Red Lion and the Boulevard. Mother of God, so many. You know, what's more impacting than driving up the Boulevard and seeing all those crosses in the middle of the road?
There's a construction on I-95 right now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
My navigation, you know, I was going on I-95, and I was like, I'm not going to listen to that. I'm going to stay on 95. And then it detoured me off. And I'll be the first to admit that I'm not very good at that area of Philly when you go off the boulevard.
Yeah.
And you're going this turn, that turn. I guess Harbison is one of the roads.
Yeah.
And I'm in
Harbison Avenue.
I'm in an area of Philly that I really never drive in. And I'm like, oh, my God, I got to make this left-hand turn across these four roads. And I'm thinking to myself, who created this catastrophe? Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting? It's so funny because Center City and South Philly.
It's a square.
It's a square, right.
And a grid that everybody can understand.
There are parts of
yeah.
Go ahead.
It's funny you say that because when I was a kid, I was born in South Philadelphia. I grew up in Northeast Philadelphia. Like, I was moved. We moved when I was younger, and my dad, you know, still gets lost in the Northeast, and we mess with him all the time. And we're like, "How'd you get lost?" He goes, "In South Philly, we have numbers and cross streets.
Yep,
you know, Northeast it goes all over."
Well, Philadelphia is the street either goes north, south, or east, west. That's it.
Well, but Philly's it's a city of neighborhoods, and if you don't know the Northeast, and by the way, I started dating my wife who grew up in Wissanoming when I was 18. So my entire adult life, I spent from the day 2 months after I learned how to drive. So the Northeast is home to me, okay? My son went to St. Matt's. And so, you know, we know the area well, but it doesn't resemble, like even East Falls where I live, it's also one of those mazes. I had somebody who
it's a little tricky.
Even
there.
A GPS may not work. Sean, let's jump to like, when people, obviously, constituent services, right? You know, you like you said, you're a neighborhood guy. You're one of the people, so you understand them. But what kinds of service can the residents expect when they reach out to your office?
Well, we do a ton of work. Specifically, the one thing we do property tax rent rebates the PCT order, it's called, to help individuals alleviate, you know, some anything they're going through. We also do senior citizen SEPTA cards because, I mean, SEPTA is crucial. SEPTA is what runs Philly. So my neighbors take SEPTA. I mean, I live right across the street from the Fox Chase train station, and I take that. I used to take the train every single day to go down to work to Center City, and that's what all my neighbors do. So funding SEPTA is one of the biggest things that I'm up here to do.
Right, and by the way, that's one of the major things we're going to talk about on the program. Why don't we just jump into it funding SEPTA, funding mass transit. Sean, you're really committed to that that issue. You're involved obviously on a lot of committees. But before we actually touch on that, I'm looking at your record. You've already sponsored or co-sponsored 47 bills and resolutions since you got in, right?
I'm up here to work for my neighbors.
And that's in 6 months. Mm-hmm. Okay. And certainly commitment, obviously, to jobs. Okay. Because we're going to spend a lot of our time talking about SEPTA and transit. And when you talk about, you know, coming from a union background, that's about work and work and people, you know, understanding, obviously, that people need to get to work. Okay, and it sure is, and we have great friends at TW 234, the union that represents the SEPTA workers, and so I've done many shows with Joe Coccio and.
Are there any contracts coming up?
Well, Sean, let's dive in, man. Funding's for SEPTA and our transit, mass transit is one of your top priorities. Talk about it.
Well, I mean, as I stated, you know, I'm a SEPTA rider. I have my key card. It's in my pocket right now. Even though I'm up in Harrisburg, when I'm back home in Philly, that's how I operate. I don't own a car. I take the bus and take the train, or I borrow my girl's car when she's around. But funding SEPTA is a crucial issue. It's not just funding SEPTA. It's funding mass transit for the Commonwealth. Because I know every time I tap that key card, that money is going to all 67 counties in this Commonwealth. See, people view SEPTA in Philadelphia, and they view Philadelphia in a sense as welfare, or you know, we're Philly, but our money from Philadelphia, and I say this with all due respect, there's no shame in my game. I'm unapologetically Philadelphian. But the money that we generate in Philadelphia and through SEPTA funds all 67 counties in this Commonwealth, wow, roads and bridges.
I didn't know that. Wait, can you say that again? Wait, the money that SEPTA makes?
Generates,
funds what?
41% for 67 counties in the Commonwealth.
41% of 67 counties in the Commonwealth?
Yes.
Wow. I didn't know that. I absolutely did not know that.
Go ahead, Sean. I'm sorry.
No, but that's when I say that people view SEPTA as welfare, it's not that. It's the southeastern region of Pennsylvania provides 41% of revenue for roads and bridges in all 67 counties of this Commonwealth.
That's like half the money. I mean, almost half.
Exactly.
That's an extraordinary. That's an extraordinary fact. I had no idea.
Yeah, and that's why people go, when they're like, "Oh, we don't want to fund mass transit, or we don't want to fund SEPTA," because they hear SEPTA and they're like, "Oh, Philly."
Yeah, it's kind of like it's kind of like what I was getting at in the beginning of this conversation about being on the Central Pennsylvania. It made to feel like you're an outcast because you were from Philadelphia. And in a sense, they don't appreciate how much money is generated in southeast Pennsylvania for the rest of the state.
I mean, listen, I'm not going to say that, but I will, you know, we carry the load.
Yeah, I think so.
We're Super Bowl champions. You think we're not going to carry, you
exactly.
know?
Exactly.
Well, just the tax revenue, you know, and the money that's generated here, because of the population and so forth, I mean, it does fund a lot of what goes on in the middle part of the state. It, unfortunately, the word just doesn't get out.
Where are we, Sean, with the funding?
I'm up in Harrisburg right now. I will let you know. It's what today is Wednesday. We're back up here next week. Hopefully, we have an idea.
What have you? Are you? Have you met Tarik Khan?
Oh, Tarik Khan has been. I love Tarik Khan. He's been influential on my campaign. He his family lives in. His mom and dad are my constituents, but Tarik Khan helped me get elected. Not only with labor, it's labor and a bunch of representatives and individuals through the neighborhood, but Tarik Khan has been phenomenal.
So he is our, my state rep, and he's been on our show.
He's our nurse friend.
We've had many discussions with Tarik. I just love him. I think he's fantastic.
Talking about funding hospitals so they don't have to wait in the ERs.
Right. Remember? We've had long conversations. What I was going to say, as a young state rep, obviously, having relationships with individuals like Tarik, you know, you guys are, you know, kind of the new breed up there. But do you find, you know, his experience, because he's in there, I think, a couple years now, to help you navigate, you know, obviously from a freshman perspective, talk about, you know, that and building alliances with, you know, with the young leaders up there like Tarik, how that benefits and helps you.
Coming from my staff, my father is the hardest worker I know, and it motivates me every single day. And then seeing what my uncle's done and working with my uncle for my uncle, it's been truly an incredible experience. Tarik Khan, I call him the Energizer Bunny because he does not stop. And as a new state rep, that is such a motivator for me because he is everywhere and anywhere and all over the state. So I'm privileged to be in the Philadelphia delegation as a representative of Northeast Philadelphia because we have a great chair, and our chair is Morgan Cephas.
Yep.
She's a great leader and great friend of labor. And we just have, you know, listen, labor to me is everything.
Do you have a lot of interaction with our speaker? She's from Philly.
Oh, Madam Speaker. Oh, my God. Yes. So a little backstory, Joe. Madam Speaker McClinton, yep, was actually a public defender just like I was. So we have a lot of connections. I love Madam Speaker. She is the absolute best, and she is the best leader. She calls it how she sees it, and the way she operates the House floor is incredible, but also can get the Philadelphia delegation in line.
She's impressive.
I'm in the Joanna McClinton fan club.
Absolutely. We've had her on, I believe we had her on the labor show. It's been a while, but we've had her on, I'm sure at least a couple times, and she was fantastic.
I got a question for you. And this is probably too much information, but believe it or not, I grew up in Lancaster. And
I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah. I'm kidding.
Well, as I say, it's not your grandfather's Lancaster. I mean, it's the city of Lancaster. It's, you know, it's home to two colleges, three colleges, and it's got a large medical community, and you know it's the city and its suburbs. It's kind of very different from the county, but you know, once again, it's a great place to grow up. So I won't criticize where I grew up, but
I bought my dog from Lancaster.
Yeah, a lot of people buy dogs from Lancaster, but they made a big deal about that special election in East Petersburg. I guess that was a state senator. There was a Democrat who had not won a seat. No Democrat would want a seat in that particular area in forever. And I'm just curious, and I'm probably, you might not have the answer here, but because I have found every time you think, you know, our state's very split between parties. The Senate,
And John, we're the only legislature in the country that has a split legislature. We have a Senate, Democratic state house.
And it's Republican. Close. Not much of a majority there. I mean, what is it, one or two seats?
102 to 101.
Yeah, and the Senate is very close, if I understand it correctly. It's just, to me, it's really, you never know which way the state's going, kind of like our presidential elections. And I'm very curious if you have a feel for the trend of the state politically, if you have a feel for it, because you're in Harrisburg. Do you feel it tracking in one direction politically or another?
To be honest, John, I really can't answer that at this time. Yeah. I mean,
who knows? I mean, it just goes.
Yeah,
it's very bizarre to predict. I mean, you can't do it.
One thing I wanted to ask you, and this is important. I'd like to talk about your father's influence on you. You know, you obviously went to law school. And became an attorney. Your father, one of the most reputable judges in the history of the city, okay, and a PA Supreme Court Justice. Now,
up for retention.
Up for retention, okay. And his record is impeccable. You know, talk about his influence, integrity, passion, but also, I mean, his reputation is second to none.
What was it like growing up in his house? That's what Joe really wants to know.
Well, just talk about the influence that he's had, obviously, at least professionally.
I love my father with all my heart. He's my everything, to be honest. I don't know what I would do without him. He has taught me so much in this life, you know, not only from the little things, but then, you know, in the legal sense and everything. I really can't, words can't express what my father means to me and all he's done in his career. When he was in family court, you know, he dealt with the flash mobs as administrative judge.
Yep.
And then now he's a Supreme Court dealing with autism in the courts and opening that up. And it's just truly.
He shared that story with us, remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
Listen, my dad would always tell me, the shoes I wear are to fill them. I don't know if I can do that. Because what he's accomplished is truly incredible. I love him with all my heart.
I mean, it must feel great, you know, because his reputation, you know, is so impeccable. My dad loved him. Okay.
I have to say, Mr. Dougherty, your dad is in my family just regarded above everything else because your dad did what I'm trying to do. He took care of his members and just, I don't know how else to say it. He just was beloved, worked hard, and took care of his members. Well, I'm half the man that your father is and half the man that my father is, I think I'm doing a pretty good job.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll tell you, my dad would tell me, I've, of course, some of the greatest compliments ever were your father coming up to me, especially when we were in a difficult situation and talking about how influential my dad was in supporting him. And, you know, I can tell you that when your Uncle John, my dad had told me many times what the Electricians Union was like before he took it over. Okay. And it took it to national prominence, okay? And it's funny because, politics is a funny game. My father and John were so close, but they didn't always agree on everything, right? But politics is a funny situation because especially in a labor community, because you may not agree on everything, but ultimately speaking, there's different issues. And when it came to defending labor, and when it comes to labor itself, everybody's got each other's back. So in other words, it's like brothers. You can fight and dispute, but when it comes to messing with the machine and working people, they were such great allies. Your father having that understanding, and I know you, of working families, of the challenges of working families, of giving back. When I was going to ask you about your father, you talk about the autism and your dad talked about that when we did the last broadcast with him. I'm looking at your record. Okay. Sean, your faith, talk about what that means to you. Okay. But also, like you said, giving back, you started giving back in high school and continued in college. Okay. Talk about that and how much it impacts you in your daily life today when you're serving tens of thousands of people.
I mean, Joe, you, as you stated, you learn from your family. And I am blessed to have individuals like my father, my mother, my uncle, my aunt, all my family, my mama, my pop, that taught us how to give back.
Yep.
So when I was in high school, I actually did a service trip to the Navajo Nation in Arizona, which was actually the reason I did it. Again, I'm unapologetically Philadelphian. It was St. Michael's Indian School. I did a week trip there to help fulfill, help the school, like fulfill all their needs. Like we built structures, we cleaned, but St. Michael's Indian School was actually started by Mother Catherine Drexel from Philadelphia. So that is what really intrigued me. But that was the real eye-opener in my eyes to serve other people, to help people. You know, at that time in my life, I was just worried about how many points or assists I was getting in a basketball game.
Right.
I didn't realize that individuals need help in that sense. And I absolutely loved it. It's what motivated me to become, I mentioned, I wanted to be a prosecutor, but being a public defender was the best job of my life, other than this job that I'm currently holding. Because the opportunity to help people is there's nothing like it. Words can't describe it. I'll say that.
And that, by the way, that's a common fabric in your family. I got a quiz for you here, Sean. I've not called you Kevin once, so it's a miracle.
I told you, I get that call. I get called that all the time.
Exactly. So here's a saying, John Tavanos, and you just want to ID the program. You're listening to the Labor and Legal Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We're having a conversation with State Representative Sean Dougherty. Here's a quiz. Who said this? The best way to never forget where you came from is to never leave.
Never leave. That's my uncle.
Yep. It's one of the great sayings. John Dougherty said that. I've repeated it to him at least 1,000 times on the radio. Okay. And talking about giving back and the lives that have been impacted, they're just too numerous. Okay. And so that fingerprint, that, it will last forever and it will continue. You're on the Veterans Affairs Committee. Talk about the commitment to our armed forces and our veterans, making a difference in their lives. Who have come home to more difficult situations than when they served.
Absolutely. And one of the best, that is actually, between us, it's my favorite committee I'm on, Veterans Affairs. You know, I don't get to pick, but that one really made an impact because so many, everyone talks about the paternal aspect of my family heritage, but no one talks about my maternal heritage.
Right.
With my mother. So my family on my mom's side are all West Point's graduates. My grandfather, I have two uncles, three uncles, a cousin. But my grandfather was actually the, on my mom's side, my pop-up. I have pop on one side on the paternal side, pop-up on the maternal side. He was a lieutenant colonel, combat veteran, served as the defense attaché for the United States government in Islamabad, Pakistan, in 1979. And actually, my mom went to, like, when we talk about Philadelphia, you talk about, you know, neighborhoods and what schools you went to. Well, my mom went to the International School of Islamabad.
Wow.
That's where she went to high school. But November 21st, 1979 is a day that always lives in my heart because I was taught it by my mother. November 21st, 1979, my mother, she was one of six, evacuated from Pakistan. She lived in Pakistan.
That's
she was evacuated.
Iranian hostage crisis was in 1979.
Exactly. Well, so the thing that people don't talk about enough is the Iranian hostage situation going on. But a lot of people don't know that the U.S. Embassy in Pakistan was actually attacked.
I didn't know that.
A lot of people don't. It's a crazy story. But my mom tells me, you know, my grandfather, as a defense attaché, was in the embassy on that morning when it was attacked. There was one Marine killed. Stephen Crowley, God rest his soul, was one of the Marines on the roof when he was shot and killed.
Where, in Islamabad? In Islamabad,
yeah.
So, Sean, just a good question for you. I don't mean to cut you off. So the day that the students, or whatever you want to call them, in Iran stormed the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, the same day that happened in Islamabad?
No, it was a different day, November 21st, 1979.
Okay.
So my mom was a senior in high school and one of six, and she was pushed onto a plane to be evacuated back to the United States.
Wow.
That's
a story.
It is.
Oh, and she didn't, when she got back to the U.S., she didn't know if her dad survived or where her brothers and sisters were. That's how crazy it was. So that is a day that...
And we're still talking about Iran today.
Yeah. Obviously. Especially today.
Oh, man.
So, and, you know, your commitment, you know, so I especially when it comes to our military, how do you... I know, obviously, you know, you're in your freshman year, but here's an interesting thought. This is an interesting thought. I was on a radio show. You know Jeff Nierenberg? I'm talking to...
Yeah. Heard of him. Don't know.
Lawyer, right?
He's a lawyer, yeah. Right. So listen to this. I'm doing this relationship show with him. And he said something, and we only have a couple minutes left.
Did you
left
say relationship show?
Yeah. His wife wrote a book.
Oh.
And so we were co-hosting that.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't just me and Jeff.
It's just like, where's that going?
So he's a relationship... I mean, his wife... Dr. Allison Nierenberg had a relationship show, and it was Dr. Allison Nierenberg and friends. We were the friends, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but we were talking. We had a veteran on, and she became a psychologist after she left. And we talked about, I'm going to try to spit this out real quick. We talked about the challenges that veterans have, and she said a couple things, Sean. You know, I asked her directly. She was calling in. She was... really accomplished for somebody who, you know, who's a veteran and became a doctor of psychology after she left. But I said to her, what could be done to help our veterans? And she said, well, you know how we have boot camp to go in? We should have it to come out, number one.
Oh, wow.
And then she's, and then in the midst of that conversation,
well, so they can
adjust, blend,
adjust, and get back into society.
And here's something that Jeff Nierenberg said, and I'll never forget it. He said, we should give everybody, every veteran, a what's the best type of medical coverage? Blue Cross Blue Shield. What kind of card is
Man.
It?
I don't know.
They should all get a personal choice card, mm-hmm. okay? Instead of, you know, the VA hospitals and all that stuff, and I know things are getting better. As an American, I'll pay more taxes for that. You know what I mean? So that any veteran can go wherever they want, whenever they want, they got that personal choice card. So you know what, Sean? When you go back to the house tomorrow, say you got a plan, and we're going to solve that.
Hey, listen, Joe, really quick, and I know we're cut on time, but I just want to say I did, thanks to, one, we have a great veterans court with Judge Pat Dugan, former Judge Pat Dugan.
Love
in
Pat.
Philadelphia.
We've had him on the show.
Oh, he's great. Love Pat. But I also am, I just put an amendment, a constitutional amendment for the PA Disabled Veterans Real Estate Exemption.
Yes.
Which voted out of committee. We're going to see what happens in the Senate. But it would really help veterans that are 50% labeled disabled and up. So whatever their percentage is as their disability is the exemption that we can get. So right now in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, you only get this exemption if you're fully 100% disabled or not. But I have a neighbor, you know, that is a young individual, three kids, and he was 100% disabled. But as he gets tested and or reassessed, I would say, you know, the percentage goes down, and he loses it, that exemption, when he fought two tours of duty.
Incredible.
Overseas. So this amendment I have, the constitutional amendment, is hopefully it passes in the Senate. But it's going to say if you are 50% labeled disabled as an Army vet in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, then that is the percentage of tax exemption that you get.
Fantastic. Keep it, Sean, keep us posted. This has been the fastest hour in radio. We can't thank you enough. John Cervantes, thank you for being the host and giving us this opportunity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the Labor and Legal Show here on WWDB Talk 860. We want to thank Sean Dougherty, State Representative, representing the 172nd District here in Philadelphia. And, of course, a shout-out to Kevin Dougherty, our fantastic PA Supreme Court Justice up for retention, just an incredible human being. On behalf of John Cervantes, Sean Dougherty, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.